Cinderella meets Esther meets Dr. Doolittle. That's all in The First Slipper. Coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the best, the only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right. You're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J. Thank you so much for being here with me today. I am so excited for several reasons, the most being that today is my birthday. Yes! Thank you, Lord, for letting me see a whole nother year. Another year. And the reason why is because I did not have to be here today. The Lord is so gracious and so kind to me. Thank you, Lord, for allowing me to be here one more year. And I'm excited, too, because my twin sister is also here. And guess what? Y'all know how it was last year, how she almost had those medical issues and she almost died. But the Lord blessed both of us to be here another year. And I was thinking about that today, and I put that in a blog post that I did for Grace and Faith for You. It's called God, Our Creator. God is our creator. And I was really reflecting on God being a creator and how he created all of us for a specific purpose. And because of that, I was so filled with joy. And when you look at how COVID is taking out so many people, how the world has been shut down, how people have lost their business and their livelihood, and the Lord still sees fit to say, I will give you one more minute. I will give you one more second. I will give you one more year. You got to just jump up and thank the Lord for it. You got to. So that's how I'm feeling like that today. I'm so thankful for his mercy and for his grace. You know, I just started a Patreon account. So if you want to support Right Stuff and what we do, you can go to patreon.com/rightstuff and consider being a monthly supporter. You can start off being a monthly supporter for $3 a month. This show is sponsored by one of our Quill members, Nathan James. He is also the owner of the Untold Podcast. He is also a Quill supporter for The Right Stuff. So today's show is sponsored by Nathan. We want to thank Nathan for his support. Thanks those of you who have already signed up to be Quill members of The Right Stuff. I don't take your patronage lightly. If you want to support, again, go to www.patreon.com/rightstuff. Appreciate the support. And I know, don't be angry with me. I promise you I will have a book out this week. I got so sidetracked. The book is not going to come out this week. I was hoping it would come out today. I actually pushed it to next week, which is April 28th. So having said that, look forward to Eva, which is book one of the Hearts of South Dakota series that I'm working on. Book one of that series drops next week. If you want to call in and weigh in on our topic, you know you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guests on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, the Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very, very glad you are here with me today. We are growing here at Right Stuff. We're broadening our distribution, I should say, and we're now on Spotify and iHeartRadio. So if you have friends who listen to us, who want to listen to us, they can listen to us on iHeartRadio as well as Spotify. Simply plug in PJC Media for all our shows on this network. I'm so excited to talk to my guest, co-host, and contributor today. She has a wonderful story called The First Flipper. And when I read the synopsis of this story, I was definitely intrigued. And so I had to invite her on here. And it's funny because she was out of the country for a while. And so when she came back in, she was like, yeah, I'll be on the show. So I'm so excited to have her with us today. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest, co-host, and contributor, Keturah Lamb. Keturah, how are you doing today?
Oh, great. Thank you, and happy birthday. Hello? Are you still there?
No, sorry about that. I said you can tell how excited I am to be here another year. And just so thankful to the Lord for bringing me here. And thank you so much, Keturah, for being with me on the show. And I say this all the time. I never take it lightly when people come on board. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Just delve into our interview and know a little bit more about you. So I always start off the interview with the question of tell us about yourself, because I can always read your bio. But what does that really mean? So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Okay, so I'm the oldest of 12 children, and we live on a little farm in Montana. I have many hobbies, but I clean houses in the daytime and get up early in the morning and do most of my writing. I'm very extroverted. I'm ENTJ for anyone who's a Myers-Briggs fan. And so I like to burn the candle on both ends, get up early and write, clean houses all day, and then go party at night with friends.
So. Nothing wrong with having that energy there. You know, I don't know what my Myers-Briggs categorization is, but I know I'm an extrovert through and through, and I know I probably fall into one of those four-letter categories. I don't know which one, but, yeah, you know, I like people. Yeah. I wonder, you know, and you said you're part of 12. You said you're the oldest of 12 children. And
yeah.
That, you know what was so funny about that? A friend of mine back in the day, she was the youngest of 13. So
oh, wow.
I'm like, you know, and I remember thinking, and mind you, we're the same age, and so I was like, well, you know, yeah, I think that's awesome. I totally think that's awesome.
Oh yeah,
I think that's awesome.
It's definitely,
you know,
great.
Yeah, how does it feel having all those siblings around? Do they help out? Do you guys get in these huge squabbles? I mean, what is that like?
Well, for me, it feels normal, but. There's definitely sibling squabbles, but they're not that bad. And as we get older, we become better friends, and like my sister who's just under me, we used to say we were worst enemies and best friends, but now we only say we're friends. So the enemy part is gone in the past.
Yeah, I can see how that happens because when you're siblings, everything is so sharp. You know, every slight is very sharp, and you hurt my feelings because you stole my Barbie or whatever, who knows. And then you get older, like, wow, that really doesn't matter anymore. It's not like the sister on one of those sitcoms where the sister stole the other sister's property. She stole everything and the ice tray, you know. Not one of those numbers. So you sit there like, okay. So that's awesome that you live in Montana. I heard Montana is very beautiful and a lovely area out there, you know. So my next question deals with this, and there's a lot I want to talk to you about, but my next question basically deals with your writing journey. And so what does your writing journey look like? You say that you write and you have candles lit at both ends. So tell us about that writing journey.
So do you mean like when I started writing or what my routine looks like?
Well, your routine is probably the next question I'll ask. So right now, what your writing journey looks like, when did you know, hey, I want to be a writer?
Okay, so I always said I loved writing. When I was 7 years old, I thought I was so clever because when people asked me what my hobbies were, I'd say writing, reading, and drawing. When I was like 9, 10, 11, I used to always say that up until I realized it wasn't that clever. But I've always loved writing stories, and we always had people living with us, just people my dad would help out with or just friends staying over. And I would write out my stories and illustrate them and just hand them out to everybody. So back then I always knew I wanted to write or loved writing. I wasn't exactly sure how that was going to look in the long run. And then as I got into my teens, I kind of just went to poetry, not so much drawing and illustrating and writing. But when I was 16, I discovered a blog called Go Teen Writers. And it just really encouraged me to sit down and finish something. Before that, I had only written like poems and short stuff that I hadn't actually finished. And at that same time, I'd also joined a writing knitting community. And that knitting community had subgroups, and there was a writing one, and it was like short stories. So like for a whole month, you were challenged to write a short story. So with the Go Teen Writers kind of backing me up with inspiration on how to finish a story, and then with this inspiration from this knitting group to have a story finished within a month, I wrote my first short story, and the ending was like, I don't know, there was something about that ending that just kind of sparked with me, and I was like, endings were what I loved the best. And I realized as soon as I knew what my ending was, I was able to write my stories. And after that, I wrote quite a few short stories. And I joined a Go Teen Writers Challenge a few years ago, like 2 years after I was 16. So about 18, I joined a challenge called 100 Words for 100 Days. And the idea of that challenge was to write on one manuscript, 100 words on it every single day and do that for 100 days straight. So I did that and I finished my first novella. And after that, I just kind of went uphill. I wrote novels. I joined NaNo, National November Writing Month, and finished my first novel that I'd been working on since I was 16. And then after that, I wrote a whole another novel in a month, which is The First Flipper. And then since then, I've written two more novels and I'm on my fifth.
I like how those challenges that you joined began your career. And I think for a lot of people, sometimes you just need someone else that's doing the exact same thing to give you that boost. You know what I'm saying? And I like how you mentioned that. And I know with Go Teen Writers, just encouraging young people to write and to, you know, use the gift God gave them to write. You know, what's interesting, though, and I got to say, I haven't heard this before. You know, you said once you know the ending, you can write the story. And usually, I won't lie, usually the other way for me. Like, I know how the story begins. I have a somewhat of an idea how it's going to end. So do you just write the ending, like, you know, with knowing the characters' names? Or, I mean, how does that work? I'm a little curious about that.
So I kind of, in my mind, it's like the sunset. I view the sunset. So I view, like, the feeling of how I want the ending to look. Like the message of my story, like I don't even know necessarily the message, but I know the end feeling I want you to have. And so when I go into a story, I know I want to deal with certain concepts and messages. I haven't got my characters at all. I just have that message and that ending. And then somehow a story just kind of comes around it. the beginning is usually the hardest for me. I have to rewrite it several times until I feel like it's an actual story and not just a sermon, because I do not want to write a sermon. I want to write a story, of course. Mm-hmm, and so I just rework that, and then I write chronologically. So I start from the beginning and I go to the end, but that end is what I'm pushing towards. That makes sense.
Okay, I see now. Okay, well, that's a good way of doing it, and I like to share these type of things with our listeners, because everyone writes differently, and they're going to get to the finish line in different ways. So that's kind of like what I like about what you did. So, yeah, I think that's fascinating. I know for me, I can't even start the story unless I have my beginning sentence, and I'm a pantser through and through. And as a pantser, you know, we go with the flow. And I've heard some, I had one guy on the show a few weeks back, and he's like, I don't like pantsers. I said, okay, we can't be friends anymore. You know, he's just joking, but we can't be friends anymore, because he's a diehard plotter. And there are some people who say, well, you can't pants because if you pants this. I said, well, I pants quite well. I mean, you know, I'm not doing too bad. You know what I'm saying? So obviously you must do something.
I've read some of your books, and they definitely don't have plot holes.
But I do okay. If they have plot holes, you'd be like, huh, so how did this horse get in the middle of the house? You kind of wonder,
and
one of those things. So,
and there's a misconception about pantsers. Like, yes, we go with the flow when we just write the story, but we still have the story in our head. It's not like we're just, like, dropping words and seeing what happens. I mean, we are to a degree, but at the same time, we have a story that we're writing. The story is in our head. We see it.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people do have to get that understanding. But I love talking about pantsers versus plotters versus hybrids. I love talking about that, because you never really get tired of it, because sometimes you just learn things, which is so fascinating. So that's why I definitely call myself a pantser. But yeah. So what we're going to do is take a really quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Couture about her book, The First Slipper, but I want to get to know more about her behind the scenes, and I know you do too. So if you want to call in, you certainly can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The Spec Faith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SOARMAG.com or order a print issue on MagCloud.com. If you would like more information about SOARMAG Digital, check us out on SOARMAG.com or contact us at SOARMAG@Yahoo.com. SOARMAG Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very, very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to my guest co-host and contributor, Keturah Lamb. She is the author of the novella, The First Slipper. It's available if you want to get a copy of it on her website at Keturah's Corner with a K.com. Again, that's Keturah's Corner with a K.com. So excited to talk to Keturah today. She was a recommend from my good friend Travis Perry of Bear Publications. So we always want to give a shout out to our connectors here, because without our connectors, the right stuff wouldn't be the right place. Yes. And so, Keturah, once again, thank you so much for being with us on the show. I'm having so much fun talking with you as we just peel back the veil and see who you are, what you're all about, and all that good stuff. So we were talking before the break about pantsing and plotting. So that brings me to my next question, which talks about your process. So go ahead. You kind of gave us a little hint of it, but go ahead and give us the full shebang there.
Okay, so before I get into my routine, I'll just say real quick that my blog is katuraskorner.blogspot.com. And
Thank you for correcting that.
But yes, so for my routine, it changes a lot because I've been traveling right now. I'm still getting back into it. But my normal routine that I've had for the last probably 3 or 4 years is getting up between 5 and 6:30 and then just writing for an hour to an hour and a half. And my goal is to have somewhere between 200 to 700 words. But the last year and a half, I've usually written around 1,800 words. But so I have a few different routines, because I write both fiction and nonfiction. So my fiction is for my morning, is in the morning time. So I do that whole hour of writing. And then as soon as, if I have a little bit of extra time, like half an hour or so before work, I'll do a little bit of blogging, just replying to comments and reading other people's blog posts, networking, maybe scheduling some of my own blogs. In the evenings when I'm not, when I haven't got any social life going on, so that's like maybe 2 or 3 evenings a week usually, or on a Saturday morning, I will sit down and I will focus more on my nonfiction. And what I do is I have a list of ideas that I want to work on and expand into articles. And I will write like as many as I can in one setting. So usually like maybe one, sometimes it's only one, sometimes it's up to 3 or 5, just depending on how much brain power it takes. Because I never write on a deadline. I keep myself scheduled several months ahead, so my blog is always 2 months out, scheduled, at least 1 or 2 months ahead. So yeah, that's kind of my thing. I work on one novel in the morning until it's finished, and then when I finish a novel, I might take a break for a few weeks and use that morning for more blogging time, or I might work on a short story because I write lots of short stories. I have dozens and dozens of those. And so maybe I'll just work on a short story, but not focus so much on the words, just kind of the short stories I write a little slower, a paragraph here and there. And sometimes if I need a break from a novel, I'll just take a break and just work on a short story or go back to editing. And then usually when I finish a novel and have a few weeks break or something, if I feel like I need to do another draft, I will go back. Most of my novels I've done my 2 or 3 drafts on them. And that process usually takes another, it depends. So when I did my nano novels, my first novel took me 4 months to write, but then 4 years, I mean, and the rewrite took a few months. And then when I did First Slipper, I wrote the novel in 1 month during nano, and then I rewrote it in 6 months. And then I worked on a whole series, a novella series, and I wrote the entire series of 6 books in a month and a half, and then I took a year and a half to rewrite the whole entire thing out. And sometimes I take breaks between these things, and I'll work on editing, applying edits from betas on the other novels I've done in the past. But I usually only do 2 or 3 drafts before I'm ready to do the next project. So yeah, that's kind of my process and routine in a nutshell.
Well, nothing sounds like you actually get stuff done, which is, that's what I can say for myself. But it looks like you get things done. And I think it's because you have that, you know, you got that that organization. And that's one of my low points is organization, that, you know, if I ever get organized, the Lord will come and take us home. That's what's going to happen.
Oh my.
By the time I get organized, like, we were just waiting for you, you know, we were waiting for you. So, you know, that's kind of interesting how you work on, you do nonfiction too. I don't do nonfiction. I admire people who do write nonfiction because they have a wonderful message to share. And I feel as if, what could I possibly tell you about my life that you would want to know? So, I can't think of anything. So that's all there is to that, you know. So it looks like you keep yourself occupied. You keep yourself writing. You keep yourself, you know, in that moment. And I think that's highly important as we talk to our would-be authors out there, because you saturate yourself with words. That's what it sounds like to me. Like, you constantly saturate yourself with words. And I think that's an important thing to kind of branch out on really quickly, about having the routine of continuing to write, even if you're not writing on the same project. Do you think that is what has been successful in completing your projects, and why is that?
So definitely words matter, whether you're reading, because even when I clean houses, I just listen to podcasts and books all day long to have that word, those words continuing to flow through my brain. But in the morning, I think it's very important to have the word flow, as you say, but it's also very good to stay committed to one project. And sometimes, like, there are so many days where I just do not feel like writing and I write anyways. But on those days, my goal isn't to have a word count, but to write. And so those days when I do not feel like writing, I write maybe only 50 words or 100 words. But then the next day, that feeling is gone because I look back at what I wrote and it gives me inspiration for something else. And then I'm all of a sudden able to put out 2,000 words, which is not normal. But most days it's between 700 to 1,000 words for the fiction. But yeah, I think just writing, which is why Go-Teen Writers inspired me. They just told me, if you want to be a writer, you have to write. It doesn't matter if the words are good or not. You just keep writing. And eventually something will come out that's good. And I've found that to be true for the most part.
Yeah, particularly if you don't like it. Because sometimes you can read what you wrote and then you go, this is trash. Throw it away. I'll never do it again. But I never throw anything away. Oh, yeah, well, not literally throw it away. I put in a different document and save it for later, because you never know when you'll use it for something else. But I know for me, when I do my rewrites, because I only do one draft, but I do rewrite as I write. And because I'm not doing it over again. I don't do it over again.
No.
Like, this is it. You know, we're done. And some people, I've done 7 drafts. And the reason why, because it drained me. Like, the book, one of my books I wrote it 7 times. And on the 8th time, I said, Lord, if you do not want me to write this book, then this is it. I'm done with it. And actually, I ended up writing that book, and it actually was well received by people, which really surprised me. Because I kind of hated it, you know. Like, I've written to you so many times. I don't care what happens to you anymore. You know? But not now, of course. But at the time, you get discouraged, you know. So I was so surprised. People were like, oh, I love this book. I'm like, really? You have no idea what that book did to me. It's a 3-year horror, you know. but I totally like that part. And so we're actually highlighting today The First Slipper. I know The First Slipper is not available or published online, but I was so intrigued by The First Slipper, so intrigued by it that I definitely want to talk about it. And then people who want to get a copy of it, we'll tell them later on the broadcast how they can get a copy of it and reach out to you to do that. But tell us
I'm all about giving away books.
Oh, gosh. Tell us about The First Slipper and what readers can expect. Now, don't give us any spoilers, though, but just tell us about it.
Okay. So I guess I can start with the inspiration. I was first inspired to write it when I was 13 or 14. I've never really been a fan of the Cinderella story because I've seen it done so many times. And just, you know, like you were saying, when you rewrite a story over and over, but also when you read a story over and over or watch a story over and over, you just get like, I want something new. So I just kind of never liked Cinderella that much. But then I stumbled across this ancient retelling of Cinderella. It was supposed to be one of the first or maybe possibly the first Cinderella story. And it was an Egyptian telling of a story. And in the story, she had a first slipper. And it's very much like a classical story, but it was just so different that it intrigued me. And I just loved it so much. And as I was thinking, I was cleaning the house with my mom, and I was telling her about this Egyptian story that I read about Cinderella and how it was just so neat and so different. And then I started thinking, as my brain does, it goes in other directions. And I was like, oh, did you realize that the Cinderella story and Esther story have a lot in common? But the main difference is that Cinderella doesn't really have a choice to go to the ball. And I mean, Esther doesn't have a choice to go to the ball. She doesn't have a choice to marry the king. She's basically forced to. And then it started making me think, but so what if she actually didn't want to marry the guy that she was forced to marry? And what would that look like? And was it really love at first sight, or was it a love that came by choice? And so that's kind of what that inspired, but I wasn't ready to write at that time. And so I waited until, I think it was 18 or 19 when I first started it. And then I wrote it in a month. And yeah, so that's basically the idea of it, was that inspiration.
Well, I get you on that. And Cinderella has been done 1,000 times. But, you know, for me, I love fairy tales. I love fairy tales, and I don't mind retelling of fairy tales at all. I mean, who hasn't? I'll be honest, I haven't read it because I don't read a lot of young adult. But, you know, the Cinder Chronicles with the – oh, what's that lady's name? Oh, I can't think of her name right now.
And the rest, Thank you.
The Cinder, you know, Crest, you know, all the –
yes, whatever. I read those. I actually love those. Those are good books. Those are good.
Yeah, but they do a nice – retelling that people, you know, you got those crucial elements in there, because sometimes you do have to have crucial elements of Cinderella. If you're going to do a retelling of fairy tale, you have to have the slipper. It doesn't have to be a slipper, but the slipper has to be there. That slipper element has to be there. The ball element has to be there. You know, I have to recognize the Cinderella story. And so,
yes,
you know, but we do like it. And I like with your story, when I was reading the first slipper, I like the uniqueness of the setting, because she is in Egypt, you know, and we're used to seeing a European Cinderella, stuff like that. So she's in Egypt, so that does give a nice place, but then she's out of place. And of course, I saw the interracial part going on in there as I was reading your story, and I particularly like that. Was that something you deliberately did as well, or was that just something that came to you as you were writing the story?
You mean with her just not being Egyptian? So that was actually part of the original Egyptian story. She was this blonde girl that was from Greece, and her sisters didn't like her because there's comments that the woman make in the first chapter about how they don't like her because her skin's as white as paper and her hair looks like wheat and her eyes are like a cat's eye. Those were actual they were inspired from the original story. People did not like her in the original story because she didn't look like them and she wasn't like them. So that was actually taken from the original Egyptian story.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know that. And I'm glad that you clarified that for me. And then, you know, she has her look in the beginning of the story. She has Minka, which is her man, you know, that we all like,
yes.
her childhood friend, her man. And Minka, you know, he's like, well, ignore them. You know, and sometimes you need those positive messages. And I think with Cinderella too, especially over the years when people retell it, they don't want Cinderella to be so reliant on Prince Charming. They want her to be independent, which I get, you know, which I get, and I understand that, even though I don't think there's nothing wrong with Prince Charming. You know what I'm saying? I don't think there's nothing wrong with him.
Yes.
You know, it's okay to want, you know, I'm married for love, okay? It's okay to want, you know, some material blessings. No, it's okay to want that.
Yes.
You know, if I'm married for love, that's fine. But yeah, you know, whatever. My mind went off somewhere that I need to come back from. but I think that, you know, that's an interesting part of the story there. And so when you were looking at retelling the story, I know there were certain themes that you wanted to explore, because you were retelling the story, of course, but there were also themes in that story. Tell us what some of those themes were.
So one of the themes were several themes, I think, here. Basically, when you marry, can you learn to love the person you marry? And is love something that is determined by feelings or by choice? And is love something that happens because it's of first sight or because of a decision, basically? That's the overall theme, but there's underlying themes too. The first slipper, there's a whole mystery around the slipper because it belonged to one of her ancestors, and the second slipper is missing, and I won't give away that, of course, but there's a whole slipper theme around that mystery, missing slipper. And then also, as you say, the classical Cinderella, a lot of people don't like that because they see her as this woman who just has no backbone and who just needs a prince to come save her. I kind of did play on that a little bit because I actually don't see anything wrong with having a prince, as you say. And I think that a girl can still be confident and also depend on a man at the same time in a way. My character in First Slipper, she's very loyal to her uncle who she lives with and her the guy that she likes. She's very loyal and very, some people would say she has no backbone, but I don't think that equates to having no backbone. You could still love the men in your life and support them and have a backbone, if that makes sense.
No, I think it does, because you don't always have to be the one charging for with the spear. Sometimes you could be the one praying for the person going out. And I think that matters.
Or be their backbone.
Sometimes, yeah, you could be their backbone by being their support. I mean, you know, we couldn't have the magnificent buildings if there weren't, you know, posts that held up that held up the building, because you can have a Taj Mahal, but if it falls down because the post isn't working right or isn't sturdy enough, guess what? You won't have that. And so I like that element, and I'm not really a fan of people emasculating men in order to make women look better. I've always felt like it can be equal. I always felt that way. But still, what do I know, Kathura? What do I know at all? And for those
of
you
listening, I think you know a lot.
For those of us listening in, we're talking to Kathura Lamb. She is the author of the book, The First Slipper, which is a wonderful retelling of Cinderella, based off the original Cinderella. But it's not just Cinderella. It's also the story narrative of Esther, as well as the Dr. Doolittle. If you want to know more about it, simply go to her website, Kathura's Corner with a K.blogspot.com, to go ahead and request your copy of The First Slipper, as well as the fascinating website, wonderful blog post that you just really get you into her mind. One thing I like about Kathura, as you read her blog post, you find out that you're not going to put her in a box. She's a woman of many talents, many interests, and also many things. So when you read her story, you're not going to get something standard. You're going to get something unique. And we'll talk more about that, because Bear Publications published two of her stories in an anthology. No, yeah, one story in one of their anthologies, and another one. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. If you want to call in, you can call in at 646-668-8485 and press that 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Write Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services, to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products, to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious. We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction. Speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app, developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Losing sales due to incorrect algorithm influence categorization? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience who's eager to devour your Christian, faith-based books in a variety of subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Become a content contributor and receive early notification of when you can start uploading your content. Go to twotigersllc.com and sign up today. Readio, the app for great Christian books. Follow us on social media at twotigersllc.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Today is my birthday. I'm so thankful to be here. And with me celebrating my birthday is my guest co-host and contributor today, Keturah Lamb. She is the author of the book, The First Slipper, which you can get for free at her website, Keturah's Corner with a K, .blogspot.com. And then you can browse through her blog to know more about her. She has a wicked sense of humor. I loved reading her blogs and going through her stories. She has so many stories with unique ideas. And one thing I like about Keturah is that you're not going to box her into a genre. You're not going to box her into what you want her to be or what a reader wants to be. She's going to give you a story that comes from the depths of who she is as an author. And I love that about her. So The First Slipper is no different. You can get your copy by simply contacting her by going to her website, Keturah's Corner with a K, .blogspot.com. And Keturah, once again, thank you so much for being with us on the show as we just peel back the veil of who Keturah is. And I wanted to give people an idea about some of your published works, which are in a couple of anthologies. Now, I know about Travis Perry because I work very closely with Travis, and I know he recently published an anthology. Tell us about the anthology, what the name of the anthology is, and the story that you have in that one.
Okay, so Travis Perry's anthology is called Mythic Orbits Volume 2, and it's a collection of speculative short stories by Christian authors. But the stories aren't necessarily Christian, but they're all by Christian authors. So my story in that one is called Honorella, and it's about a girl who attends Cinderella's ball. And I'm sorry, what was that?
Go right ahead, please.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so it's basically just a story from another girl's perspective who attends the ball, hoping to win the prince's attention. And that story I did expand into another novel that I just finished a few months ago. And that one I've called All the Other Girls, and it's about several other girls who attended Cinderella's ball, but specifically it's about Cinderella's best friend who talks Cinderella into going to the ball.
Oh, nice. That's what I say, you kind of don't like Cinderella, so you have to take Cinderella out the picture, right? You'll be the side character. We'll have everyone else come around you. But
yes.
I love that. Yes. I love that. Now, what was it like when you were working with Travis to put that story together in the anthology? Cause I know Travis works together with the authors when he's working on an anthology. So what was that whole process like for you?
It was very exciting because it was my first thing to ever like be done, I guess, professionally or published in a way. I met him at a writer's conference, which happened to be my first writer's conference. And someone I had an appointment with said, oh, you got to go talk to Travis Perry. He's the guy who does short stories. And I think I brought a list of 30 short stories I had written. So he said to send him a couple of my stories I thought were better. And he read them and he liked one of them. We changed the title. It was originally called Unchosen Girl. And we changed it to Honorella. And then he did a few edits, and we talked about the edits. And I think I applied all of his edits except for one. There was just one little word. I liked it better the way I had it. So, but we both worked together really well, and it was really fun just having the edits go back and forth, and then fun signing the contract. And, yeah, it was a very fun process. I didn't have any stress. Everything was able to be done in a timely fashion, and yeah, I enjoyed it.
I like, because I work with Travis too. I had one of my stories published with Travis, too, in Beatitudes and Woes. And I had a different experience because I had to rewrite a whole story because I'm not good at Blood and Mayhem, apparently. That's what he said. He said, you know, you're so much better at romance than Blood and Mayhem. So I said, well, thank you. So nice to know I have a preference there. But I say this in brotherly and sisterly love, you know. But my first story was kind of campy, actually. I won't tell you what it is because I don't know if I'm actually going to do something with it, but he helped me out, and he's really good at that type of thing. So what was the other short story that you had published? You had another one published, another anthology. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, so there's another anthology. I actually have two stories in it. It's a collection of libertarian fairy tales. As you think all I write is fairy tales, it's not true, but it happens to be a lot of what I write, right? But yes, so the two stories in that story, that anthology, it's called The Fairy Tale Riot by Agorist Writers Workshop. And they're all libertarian, have libertarian themes. And so the two I have, the one's called The Piper's Last Song. And it's a retelling of the Pied Piper mixed in with the history of the early Waldensians. They were an Anabaptist group back in the early centuries after Yeshua was crucified, so one of the churches who were persecuted anyway. So it's mixing that history with the early Pied Piper story, and it's a very tragic, but I think beautiful story, and it's got some poetry in it, and just fun. The other story is a comedy, and it's called Prince Perfect, and it's about this prince who goes on a quest to find an equally perfect bride. And so he goes through all the different fairy tales of the classical stories, saving them, goes and saves Rapunzel, saves Cinderella, saves several other princesses. He saves them all, but he just isn't quite able to find that girl who's good enough. And so it has some fun themes mixed in under the comedy, but it's a very much of a comedy.
But save that, if he ever finds perfect, let me know where he found that at. So. I like that. And see, that's just so indicative of the type of fiction you write. You don't write inside the box. And I think a lot of readers, as they browse through your blog, again, you can go to Katora's Corner with a K, .blogspot.com. You can go there and find out more about her because she doesn't just write about fairy tales. You know, that this could be a niche. It's okay, you know, but you write about other things as well. And when people read your blog, what are some other things they're going to learn about you through that blog?
So I have a couple different models to talk about, and it kind of ties my fairy tales into all of it. I view life as this great big fairy tale, but our author is God, and we are real. And it's kind of like Narnia, C.S. Lewis's Narnia. Everyone loves Narnia, but I love Earth because this is God's land that he gave to us. So I view fairy tales as this lesson for life, but life is so much more beautiful. So my motto for writing is I don't write to escape reality, but to learn how to better embrace it. And that's kind of what you see with both I mostly write fairy tales and contemporary because I view them both as the same, as stories for human nature and what it means to be human and what it means to have these different ideas and where those different ideas lead to and how they affect us. And all of my stories, both fairy tales and contemporary, usually have a bittersweet ending that leaves you thinking and also hoping.
One of the things that I think you said is quite profound is that you don't escape it, you embrace it. And often enough, sometimes, particularly right now, when everyone's dealing with the pandemic in some way, you know, even if you have to keep working, people understand you keep working. If you're isolated, like me, I'm in self-quarantine, you know, it bothers me because I am an extrovert, and not being around people, it has driven me crazy. And however, though, during this time, I'm learning to trust in the Lord and learn to enjoy my own company. And I'm learning things about myself that I didn't know before. And so the self-quarantine and being with the Lord has been quite helpful. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, okay, I didn't know that about me. And then I'm actually channeling, if I can use the word loosely, channeling my introvert, because sometimes the introvert can really focus quite well without distractions. But for me, it's like not having the distractions is a distraction, you know, because you need, you know, yeah. people in the background or walking around so you can think. Sometimes that white noise helps you think, you know, and just having, well, not white noise, but just having that commotion around you helps you think. Whereas complete silence, you're like, oh my gosh, there's no one here.
What am I doing? My brain
what
is
exploding.
With my
life? You know, and so. Yeah, it's been interesting for me learning different parts of myself I didn't know. And, so I really like the fact that you say you embrace the reality. And sometimes we don't want to. Sometimes we don't want to because sometimes reality bites. We totally understand that. Like, this bites, you know. Mm-hmm. We totally understand that. But thankfully, in our reality, the Lord is there to help us through it all. And I think that's just totally awesome that he's still with us through it all. So as people read your stories, what type of response do you get from readers?
I get a lot of mixed response. With my early novels, I mostly got negative responses, especially with First Slipper, because people did not like how the girl loved her uncle so much and basically did whatever he told her to do, even when it hurt her. But I still loved how I did that because it showed her to be a very sweet person who was willing to give up all of her dreams because she loved her uncle so much. But I've since had better reception. People are starting to like some of my stuff better. I still get a lot of mixed responses because I do write a lot of controversial ideas into my fiction and my nonfiction. But it's starting to get better received. I'm not for sure that's because I'm presenting it in a better way, or because I myself am becoming less controversial, or because I've just kind of found my niche of, or my little, like my readers have found me and they just like more what I have. I definitely have a lot of good readers now.
You have a tribe. I think every author needs a tribe. And that's why I tell authors who are really starting off, you know, you keep pushing even when it doesn't seem as if you're making a headway. Because once you build your tribe, you start to find people who like what you write. I know for myself, I remember when I got my first super fan, and her name's Tamini, and she she's my first super fan. Like, I never had someone outside of family be so supportive. And she's literally read everything I've written, and she'll buy it as soon as it comes out. And it's like, wow, I have a super fan, you know? And I'll never forget it. I never had one before. And we actually met because she lives in the area here, and we met for lunch, and she literally hugged me for like a full minute in the middle of the restaurant. And I was humbled by that. And then we talked and had a wonderful time talking. And it was like, wow, this is what it means to have a super fan. And it just makes you want to be a better writer. It makes you want to get better at this gift that God gave us, like the story of the talents. You know, he gave us these talents not to bury, but to use and multiply and affect people's lives. And I remember after the whole meeting with her, I said, wow, I have to be a better writer. If just for her. You know, if just for her, if no one else bought my book, I want to be a better writer just for her. And that really changed my perspective. I know once you have a tribe, once you have those readers who love what you write and who will support you, it's the best feeling in the world. You know, and then what's going to happen, you know, eventually for both of us couture, Steven Spielberg's going to meet us. Steven Spielberg's going to come. He's going to say, you know what, Parker Couture, come with me. And we'll go, yes, sir, you know, or something like that. Well, I know I probably will. You may go, I'll think about it, Steven. I'll think about it, you know. But
I definitely will have to think about it.
I'll think about it. But depending on what they're going to do, we'll see. But I've enjoyed our conversation. I want people to get a chance to connect with you. I've given your blog post website. So if they want to connect with you in any other manner on social media, where can they find you online?
So they can find me on Instagram, Keturah Lamb, like a little sheep, and Facebook also. I don't usually accept friend requests on Facebook unless people send me a message telling me who they are. So if you want me to friend you on Facebook, definitely send me a message. I'm also on Twitter under Keturah Abigail. And then on my blog, I have another blog that you can find through that one called The Girl Who Doesn't Exist. And then I'm also on YouTube, And my YouTube channel's name is called The Whatever Girl, because I post whatever. So.
Nice. I like that. And I like the fact that we're both knitters. We're actually both knitters, which is totally awesome. I love to knit. I'm not a master knitter or anything like that. I'm more what you call like advanced intermediate. If you want to put a skill level on it, I'm advanced intermediate, but I'm not a master knitter. That's when they have to create designs and all that. And I remember looking to get my master knitter certificate, but it was really hard. I said, that's okay. I'll follow your patterns and I'll feel better about myself. So yeah, but that's kind of cool. They both knit. My grandmother taught me how to knit, and I see knitting as a life skill. People see it now as it's a fab or a fad. It's not a fad. Okay, back in the day,
necessity.
You only wore the clothes you made, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I have a soapbox about that, and I won't get on that right now because we're so much more interested in learning about you than my feelings about life skills and knitting. But, you know, Kristora, it's been wonderful
life skills
having you.
Great.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But it's been wonderful having you on the show today. We are close to the end of our show today. And in the few moments we have left, how would you encourage would-be authors out there to go ahead, pick up the pen, and write stuff?
I would just say write about what you're passionate about and actually write. Just sit down and write. And when sometimes that passion goes away, remember why you're passionate and still write. Even when you don't feel like it, because sometimes passion can be a tool, but sometimes it can also be a drawback. And so we can't rely on that alone. And also when it comes to negative feedback and beta readers, sometimes we just have to take a step back and evaluate what they're saying and apply it. Sometimes some of the best things I've learned through my writing have been from those who have hated my writing, and I was able to grow from it. Well, yes, you can be upset for a moment, but then you can actually grow from it. And so without those negative experiences, I wouldn't be able to have the positive experiences that have come later on.
Amen.
So, yeah.
Kristora, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. When you get your next book out there, let me know, because I cannot wait to have you back on the show and have you back real soon.
Oh, yes. It's been so much fun. Thank you very much.
And we were talking today to Kristora Lamb. She is the author of the novella, The First Slipper, which is a Cinderella telling as well as an Esther narrative as well as Dr. Doolittle. You can get a copy of this by simply going to her website, Kristora's Corner with a K, .blogspot.com. And you can also find out other books that she's written. If you want to read one of her published works, simply pick up Bear Publications' Mythic Orbits, Volume 2, which is published by my good friend Travis Perry, and you'll find out more about her writing. Go to her blog and just sign up for her blog posts, because I know you're going to be blessed by everything that she writes. One of the things that I love that Kristora said was that she doesn't write to escape reality, but to embrace it. And I think that's quite a profound and powerful statement to make, because oftentimes we do like to run away from the problem, run away from the hard part, run away from the complexity. But if we embrace it, we come out to be better people, particularly for those of you out there who want to be writers. Are you running away from the reality that writing is hard, that writing can really be something difficult to do? But once you write the two little words, the end, all of a sudden you have accomplished something that was very difficult to do. So are you going to do that? Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of the Write Stuff, rather. Thank you for the wonderful birthday wishes I received on Facebook, on Twitter, as well as in my personal email. Love all the birthday wishes. And we will be back same time next week. Have a wonderful, absolutely glorious blessed day.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Right Stuff. Follow Parker online at parkerjcole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.